Life Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The problems plaguing the Louisiana coast may seem far away, but one local performer is bringing her Cajun heritage to Milwaukee with her new show, Bayou State.
It's a personal look at the destruction of the Louisiana coast, but it's not just a performance. It's a dinner, a conversation, and an exhibit of photographs from local photographer Eddie Daniel, which highlights similar water quality issues here in Wisconsin.
Andrea Burkholder is the creator of the piece and the sole performer. Through her aerial dancing and homemade gumbo, she provides an intimate look at the critical problem of coastal land loss.
Lake Effect's Joy Powers caught up with Andrea and Eddie while they were setting up at Dance Works in Milwaukee. She asked Andrea why she wanted to do a piece about water loss in Louisiana.
I was on one of my many trips to go see my family in Lafayette, Louisiana. And on the way home, I happened to pick up a book because I was sitting at the airport. And the book was Bayou Farewell. It was by Mike Tidwell, and it told the story of coastal Cajun communities that were breaking apart and losing their livelihood because of the devastating land loss issues in Louisiana. And for me as an artist, I suddenly said, oh my gosh, here I am. I can explore my Cajun heritage and look into environmental issues that have concerned me.
So when we talk about, you know, Louisiana's disappearing coastline, the land loss, what are we really talking about there?
Oh boy, we're talking about the Mississippi, which has been levied and directed in a certain pathway. So it has lost its ability to bring dirt and resedimentize the coast. And then we're unfortunately also talking about the oil industry and the dredging that happens on the other end in the Gulf, where marshland is broken apart. And so barrier islands and marshlands are being destroyed. And so then when storms come, they ravage the coast and then the river can't put the dirt back in.
So would you say most of these are man-made problems?
Yes. Quickly, that's the answer. Always the coast has had this loss and regaining of dirt, right? Because it's just, you're always going to get storms. That's what's supposed to happen there. But the idea behind that is because the Mississippi is this great dirty river, it replaces that land getting lost. So you kind of have a net zero, and that's what happened for many, many hundreds of years, thousands of years. But it's the man's intervention that has shifted that balance.
The piece is an exploration of your Cajun roots, but at the same time, it's also an analysis of these water problems that are plaguing Louisiana and plaguing many parts of the world. You know, how do these two ideas intersect in your piece?
So they intersect first by staying separate and by establishing them both as very important entities of Louisiana. The culture of the Cajuns, which is familial, a very rich community, but also one that relies on the land. The Cajuns come from Nova Scotia long ago, from France even longer than that, and they survived in the Mississippi Delta area because they could hunt, trap, fish, and knew just how much to take from the land and how much to give back to be a part of it and live in sync with it. So I set that up. And then as far as the coastal issues, you start to bring in when other things invade the environment, they also have to start to affect the culture that exists in that environment. So basically, I just start to weave the two together. I have them separate, and then I weave in, and people can see for themselves and take away however much they want to see how much a culture is affected.
Okay, that was actually my next question. How do you think the culture is being affected by this land loss, by these water quality issues?
So the traditional small shrimpers and fishermen are losing their livelihood because they can no longer shrimp and fish where they used to because of the salinity issues. The salinity is changing throughout the waterways. And so because of that, many of them are having to quit their jobs and go find other work. For generations, they've defined themselves by living on the land and keeping an existence that has minimal impact with the environment. So culturally, suddenly they're having to go to work, which they are not used to. And then unfortunately, even in my family, it's happened, people go to work for the oil industry, which conveniently is also doing some more of the damage that is actually hurting those cultures.
So how do we make the leap from Cajun culture, from Louisiana, to Milwaukee?
You make the leap by realizing that everybody who's in one community is also a part of a multitude of communities. And that's one of the things that I really try to work with in this piece. So the piece begins with a dinner that I make for everybody, and we sit down and talk together and eat together. And the reason I do that is to show that, I'm talking about Cajuns, and here we are in Milwaukee, but look, here we are. Already we have this common ground of having a meal together. And as we talk, we probably find we have family from the same places, have some shared experiences, have a belief system that's similar. And so then you start to figure out where we do as people intersect, and then suddenly the cultures aren't so different. And that's my hope in this piece, is to start to tie that in for everybody.
Now, Eddie, a lot of your photography work has dealt with different waterways in Milwaukee. How do you connect the two ideas, the Louisiana coastal loss and what we're experiencing here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, that was an interesting thing when, when we first started talking about it. Andrea approached me, and I wasn't sure at first how this was going to relate. But we do have to deal with the loss of things relative to rivers. And we looked through the body of work that I've done on all three of our rivers, and we decided that the Kinnickinnick River, which has been sorely abused by pouring concrete into it primarily, it doesn't mirror exactly what's happening in Louisiana, but it relates on an emotional level to what's happening in Louisiana. The Delta is losing land literally, and in our and the river could bring that land back. In our case, we've taken a healthy river and made it unhealthy. We've put it in a straitjacket and lined it with concrete for reasons we can get into if you're interested. But they're no longer operative, and so now we're in a position of wanting to take out that concrete and make a more naturalized river.
Yeah, one of the ways you describe the Kinnickinnick is being endangered. And I would say that most people don't think of a body of water as being something that, I guess, can be endangered. But why do you describe it that way?
Actually, it's an official designation. The Wild and Scenic Rivers lists various rivers throughout the country as endangered, and usually it's for reasons of pollution or having been dammed so the fish can't swim up them. So there are a number of reasons why a river might be designated endangered. And in the case of the Kinnickinnick, it's endangered because it's not a healthy river anymore because of the concrete channelizing.
So the Kinnickinnick is actually situated right in Milwaukee. It goes along Milwaukee's south side, goes into the bay. How did we get to this place?
The Kinnickinnick is the shortest of Milwaukee's three rivers. It's the smallest watershed area. It's on the south side, as you say, of Milwaukee, and it historically had some severe flooding problems. And the concrete channel was originally placed there in order to prevent flooding in specific neighborhoods. And this happened in other parts of the Menominee and Milwaukee River watersheds as well. And the thinking at the time was you move the river past those communities in an expeditious way, and that will prevent flooding. Well, that theory held as long as you didn't add more water to the system. But we kept developing, and we added too much water to the system, and now they don't work anymore. They actually don't do what they were originally designed to do. And in the meantime, we've ruined a healthy river. And so the current state of the art is to take out concrete channels when it's feasible.
So it seems like this is a theme that not only comes up in Milwaukee, but also in Louisiana. The idea that urbanization and sort of progress, cultural, social progress in some ways, has destroyed our landscape and made our traditional cultures, I don't know if I want to say endangered, but have really hurt them in a lot of ways. How do you address this in the piece?
What I try to do is offer a personal perspective so that people can take in as much as they can take in about it. I offer the traditional Cajun music. I offer the food. I offer stories from my youth growing up with a Cajun father. I grew up in Maryland, but my family's all in Lafayette, so I had that upbringing. My hope is that by bringing a little bit of the personal to it, it allows people to hear when I get into the devastation that's happened in a way that's not just, oh no, there they go ranting, but, oh, this is her, this is a person, and here's what's happening to her. So that's how this piece tries to deal with it, is by taking that sense of personal story and then sliding in just enough information and facts to make people interested to then want to go investigate more. So my job in the piece is not to make the piece didactic. It's more to really give reflection and experience. And if people have interest, I actually offer a selected bibliography from my research that they can go to, and I offer a couple Milwaukee organizations they can go to if they want to help their water systems here.
I think that as an art piece, what happens is that we could talk all we want about the issues, that we rivers in Milwaukee, swampland in Louisiana. We can talk about those till we're blue in the face, but what art does is it reaches the audience on a non-cognitive level. What you're doing when you're looking at art, whether it's abstract photographs or whether it's dance, or whether you're talking over dinner about things, I mean, what you're experiencing, it has an emotional impact that transcends the intellectual nature of the content.
It is a piece that goes way beyond the performance. There is the dinner, there's the conversation. Why was that all important to you?
As an artist for a while, I've been dealing with the diminishing audience for live arts and looking at that, people feeling that the arts are not for them. So, one, for the past several years, I've been interested in this idea of arts access. The audience and the people around us are incredibly intelligent. So it's not that I'm trying to ever dumb down my art. It's that I want people to know that they are allowed in. And I think somewhere along the line in the arts, people stop thinking they could be a part of an artistic conversation, like somehow they had to get something in order to step in the doors. So what I really want is for people to know they can step in wherever they are, and I welcome them, and we can be a part of that conversation. So the other things I did as a part of this piece to help that is I taught community aerial classes to Milwaukee youth here at DanceWorks with the idea that kids don't always come to shows as much, but they also don't know the artists. They're taking dance, they're in performance companies, but they don't necessarily know what the people at the professional level do with what they're doing now. So just offering them an in to me as an artist, and here's how I would teach them, and here's what I do. And then I also gave a sneak peek, which was really me talking about inspiration and research, and then how I developed the work. And I showed little excerpts and then talked about all the insights behind those excerpts. So people who have a little more intellectual bend with their art could come in that way.
The aerial dancing is a very interesting part of the piece in general. Why did you decide to include it in the piece? It seems like sort of departed somehow from Louisiana, but you look at some of the pieces you're using, and of course that net, I mean, you immediately think like Louisiana shrimp boat, right? Net.
Right, so that there you go. You hit the nail on the head. Actually, the first piece that happened for me was the bungee, and that was an apparatus I created for this piece. And the bungee, you put your weight on it and it gives. So for me, the image was, how can I show land loss if I have a piece of solid ground underneath of me? So there, going into the air just gave me more space to exist in. And then having the bungee, which it makes the space completely malleable underneath of me. So suddenly I can give the image of land sinking beneath me. So that's how I did that. And then the net, absolutely, that's shrimpers, fishermen, so it has that image. So I use it as an apparatus, and I also do really use it as a prop to show it as a physical net, and it can take up almost the entire space when I pull it down within the piece.
So there's actually kind of another net. I don't know if I'd call it a net, but there's the orange fencing, that construction fencing that you often see around lakes. And actually, Eddie, you did a number of photographs of these orange construction fences. What attracted you about this subject?
I was working on a project that was larger than that on the Menominee River watershed, and which ended up being a book of mine. But while I was doing that project, I discovered this section of the Little Menominee River that was being renovated, that was being rehabilitated as a Superfund site. And as a Superfund site, they were cleaning up pollution that had been that had killed the river, essentially. So it was so toxic, no living creatures were in it. And so the whole river was essentially a construction site, and as such, it was lined with these orange fences. And I was walking along the river seeing these fences in the landscape as if, and they looked as if, they were aesthetic objects rather than construction, utilitarian objects. And so I started photographing these orange fences with an eye to the aesthetics. And I was thinking, it occurred to me that Christo, the artist Christo, who installs fences and surrounds islands with plastic material. I mean, this occurred to me, only in this case, the fences were being placed there for perfectly utilitarian purpose rather than aesthetic ones, and yet you can have this aesthetic experience with them. Because they were just running through the landscape at points where you couldn't see any construction. It absolutely looked like a sculpture.
And why did you, Andrea, decide to include them as part of your set?
So this was really interesting. Eddie had one piece hanging in his house as we were talking about what kind of photographs to use in the piece. And this is a black box theater. And the piece, when I performed it in Georgia, I used projection. It was a very white space. And we said, well, it doesn't make any sense to mimic that. This is a black space. What can we do? And he had this photo, and it wasn't just the construction fence as he took the photograph. It was that he had blacked out the entire background, and then plants had been growing through the fence, and he actually blacked out the plant material. And so then there was this this awesome sense of plant life being lost, and also with that little thumbprint or footprint of man on it. And to me, I was, there it is. And then the shocking orange, right? So the shocking orange just brings you to the texture and forces you to take a second and a third look at what is this saying. For me, too, with Eddie's work, what I love about it, and I think these pieces speak to, is that he talks about urban wilderness, and that is that man is with nature. And some people have asked me if this piece is kind of, oh, man versus nature, who's going to win? And I said, well, that's the problem. If you talk about man versus nature, you assume a winner. And you assume a loser. And my great hope is that we keep realizing we're working together. And how can we both come up on top?
In some ways, this piece is a call to action. You know, you want your audience to do something afterward. And what do you want them to do?
I want them to do what feels right for them in reaction. That's, I don't want to tell anybody what to do, but I want to give them enough of me and enough of the information that they can find their own pathway within it. That's the way change is going to happen. Not if we ever try to force people to do one thing, but if we invest each and every person and show them that they can sympathize and empathize, and they don't have to have the exact same experience, but they can still be a part in whatever way that makes sense for them.
Well, Andrea and Eddie, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Thank you.
Andrea Burkholder is the creator of Bayou State and the sole performer. Eddie Daniel is a local photographer whose work will be on display at the show. Performances of Bayou State will be this Saturday and Sunday at Danceworks in Milwaukee, and tickets must be purchased in advance. Head to wuwm.com for more information.